Vayomer Adonai El Moshe Bo El Paro Kiani Hichbadti Es Libo Vieslev Avodov Leman Shisi Ososai Ela Bikirbo. And Hashem said to Moshe, go to Paro, because I have hardened his heart and the hearts of his servants, in order to display my wonders and my signs that are these makot, bikir bo, within his midst. Dot, dot, dot. Vayomer Adonai el Moshe vi el Aharon be'eretz Mitzrayim lemor. And God said to Moshe and Aharon in the land of Egypt, saying, HaChodesh hazeh lachem rosh chodashim rishon hu lachem lechodshei hashana. This month, Nisan, is for you the first of the months. It is the first for you of the months of the year. We'll talk. OU Israel presents
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Bo. Bo is one of the few two-word named sedras, and among them, and among all sedras, it has by far the shortest gematria of its name, which is three, being made up of the first two letters of the alphabet, one plus two, in this case two plus one equals three. It is also the shortest gematria of any word in the Torah, and not that we're discussing it now, but the Torah's range of gematrias per word goes from three for bo and of, all the way to 1,500 for tistarer. But file that away someplace, or not, because we're not discussing gematria. What we are discussing, I will get to in a moment. But first, let's do Tehillim Kuflamet, Psalm 130. Shir ha-ma'alot mima'amakim karaticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli, tehiena aznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmor ya Adonai mi'ya'amod. Ki imacha hasalicha lema'an tivare. Ki viti Adonai kivata nafshi v'lidvaro hocholti. Nafshi l'Adonai mi shomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael mi kol avonotav. Achinu kol beit Yisrael. Hanatunim batzara uvashivya haomedim ebein bayam uvein bayabasha. Hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotziyem mitzara lirvacha umeafela laora umishibud lagu'ula hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar amen. Now, let's start from the beginning, the opening music, the rest of which I will play, maybe. There is a fellow named Micha Gamerman. Well, that's the name he goes by. And he has put out a series of very well-done animated videos with music, which are medleys of the different holidays. So I went to YouTube, I found his medley on Pesach, and I converted it to an MP3. and uploaded it. I'm telling it to you because I'm not 100% sure that I'm supposed to be able to do something like this, but this is what I did. And I took the first very short piece, which is the Seder of the Seder. Kadesh Urchas Yachas, Yachas Karpas, etc. Sorry. Kadesh Urchas Karpas Yachas, etc. is known as the Seder of the Seder, or the order of the Pesach Seder, of the different components thereof. Now, Pesach, as you know, is in Nisan, middle of Nisan. And even if you don't know the corresponding date in the general calendar, it's a couple of months off. We just started Shvat, so we have most of Shvat, and then Adar, and this year we have two Adars, and then Nisan. So from Tu B'Shvat, it's 3 months, or let's put it like this, works out nicely. Tu B'Shvat, the 15th of Shvat, which is coming up in a week plus on a Monday. That's New Year's for trees. We'll talk about it, Amir Tzashem, when we get closer. A month later, this year, is the 15th of Adar Rishon, which on the calendar is marked as Shushan Purim Katan. We'll also talk about that. It has almost no significance, but it has a message. A month after that is Purim in Yerushalayim, the day before which is regular Purim. But I'm working now on the 15th of the month, and the following 15th of the month is the first day of Pesach. So why, at the beginning of Shvat, am I playing the Seder of the Seder? The answer is, and let me broaden the answer to an observation. We end up with more than one time, often two and sometimes three or more, to discuss a topic and claim that it is timely, not because it matches the calendar, but because it matches the weekly Torah reading. So if at Pesach time, before Pesach, everybody's busy shopping and cleaning and doing anything else that they do, and they can't concentrate on Pesach stuff, then here's another chance. And why? Because we're reading Parshat Bo, and Parshat Bo covers the last three plagues, the one of locusts, the one of darkness, and the final one of the killing of the firstborns of Egypt, followed by the first eating of the Korban Pesach, followed by the Exodus, getting out of Egypt. So it's a very dramatic Sedra, and any discussion that we have or not, and you'll see why in a moment, maybe not, about the Seder is perfectly timed for the week of Parshat Bo. Okay, that said, I need to introduce Bo in a slightly different way. There are 54 weekly portions, known as Sedras or Parshiot. I like to call them Sedra to keep them distinct from Parsha, which has a second meaning in the Torah. But anyway, it doesn't matter. 54 weekly Sedras. For those who are quick at mathematical division, if you divide that by 3, 54 divided by 3 is 18. 18 Sedras represent one-third of the entire Torah, and the last 18 Sedras, till now, have had a total of 5 mitzvot. I refer to Nitzavim at the end of Devarim, which doesn't have any, Vayelech, which has 2, Ha'azinu, 0, Vizot HaBracha, 0, so the last 4 Sedras in Devarim had 2. Then we get to Bereshit, 1. Noach, 0. Lech Lecha, 1. Vayera, none. Chayasara, none. Toldot, none. Vayetze none. Vayishlach has one. Vayeshev zero. Miketz zero. Vayigash zero. Vayichi zero. The entire book of Bereshit has only three mitzvot, bringing our recent total to five. And then the book of Shemot begins with Parshat Shemot, no mitzvot, and Va'era last week, no mitzvot. And then we get to Parshat Bo. And Parshat Bo has a fair number of mitzvot, specifically 20. And from this point on, in the next third and the third after that, if you break it up the way that I'm suggesting, we've got the rest of the 613 mitzvot. So one third of the Torah, even though I'm picking a sort of different starting point from usual, has five mitzvot, and the rest of the 608 mitzvot are in the other two thirds. And I've said many times and written many times in Torah Tidbits that mitzvot are not at all evenly distributed in the Torah. But let's leave it at that, because more than Parshat Bo having 20 mitzvot, it has the very, very first mitzvah that was commanded to the people of Israel via its representatives, Moshe and Aharon, and for future generations, the Sanhedrin that was sitting at the time. And that is to establish a calendar. The pasuk that I read two psukim at the beginning of the show. The first was the first one of Bo, and that was to warn Paro about the upcoming plague of locusts. And then further into the Sedra, you have the command where God speaks to Moshe and Aaron in the land of Egypt still, and tells them that this month shall be the first of the months of the year. Now that sounds like sort of just a description, but we are taught by oral law that in fact that piece of information, this month is the first of your months, is a command. It is a command to the people of Israel as a whole unit, via its representatives, to establish a Jewish calendar that begins the counting of the months with Nisan, and it is the first display, probably not the best word, of sanctity of time that we are commanded to bring about. So if you look at the fuller picture, God has already taught us with the establishment of Shabbat, of creation, that there is such a thing as sanctity of time versus the mundane time. We have elements of sanctity in all the days, but basically we consider there to be a mundane level of sanctity, let's call it, in the 6 days of the week, culminating in Shabbat, which is holy. And we make it holy by reciting Kiddush in the davening and at the dinner table. And we indicate its holiness on a superior level to the rest of the week by the reciting of Havdalah as Shabbat exits. Also, in the davening, and then again in the home. So Shabbat, as the first example of sanctity of time, was brought about by God. We observe Shabbat, but God created Shabbat. And we acknowledge that by the prayers that we say and the Kiddush that we make and the compliance with the laws of Shabbat and the customs of Shabbat and the flavor of Shabbat, both on a Torah level and a rabbinic level. But now in Parshat Bo, on the eve of our leaving Egypt, after several generations of slavery and oppression. We are receiving a command now to put it into a certain perspective. The people at the time that I am talking about have not been subjected to strenuous labor and oppression for 6 months at least. The slavery, in essence, stopped, even though we were still in Egypt, because the Egyptians were busy with the plagues, and they spanned a half of a year. So we watched the plagues, we enjoyed the freedom from the plagues, and the freedom from the harsh labor, but we still were enslaved, so to speak, in the land of Egypt. And that was to change in Parshat Bo on the dramatic night of the Exodus. So before we got started on that process, God says already, you should know you're going to become a nation. And because I told you last week in the prophecy, which you didn't pay attention to because you were tired and dispirited, but I told you then that I am taking you unto me as a nation, and one of the hallmarks of a nation, one of the signs of a nation, is its own calendar. And you are commanded to make that calendar. And that will be the main focus of this show. Anyone who has heard the show before or knows me or reads Torah Tidbits knows that I am a calendar freak. I love the idea of the Jewish calendar. I must admit that I am not totally consistent with that idea because I do on occasion use a secular date. But by and large, I stick to the Jewish calendar. Not that I should start with this, but a long time ago, and I would like to say it in this man's credit, Rabbi Elihu Marcus, Zichrono Livracha, gave a talk. This goes back probably 37 years to my first year here at the Israel Center, at the OU Israel Center, when we used to have programs on Motzoi Shabbat, Saturday night, of Rosh Chodesh benching. So that would have been last week. He was the guest speaker early on, and he spoke, probably it was Parshat Bo, and he spoke about the Jewish calendar, and he impressed me with a couple of small acts which we can do, which are not part of the essential mitzvah, but they belong to the mitzvah. And that is, in this country of Israel, we are able to date our checks. Remember what a check is? I don't know if a lot of people still use them. But if you date any document or any check, date it with a Jewish date. Of course, this requires you to know the Jewish date. You know, I think I forgot all of that stuff. So let me say it now. Recording and first availability is Yom Chamishi, which is what I really should use, but that's another story, also known as Thursday, the fourth day of Shvat, 5779, corresponding this year to January 10th. Okay, so now you know what today is in both calendars, and I, over the many, many years since that talk that really made an impact on me, have always dated my checks in the Jewish calendar. And occasionally it has caused a little bit of a fun discussion, let's say. But I do it for one simple reason, actually for two simple reasons. I am privileged and pleased to live in the only country in the world where the Jewish date is recognized by the government. the official calendar of the state of Israel is the Jewish calendar, and second to that, the secular January-February calendar, and any document can be dated in either system. So over the years, mostly in years gone by, because I don't really write checks so much anymore, with credit cards being more popular, and some places don't even take checks anymore. Anyway, I would date them in the Jewish calendar, and the person would look at it and sort of half smile and say, "I'm ashamed to ask, is this today?" Because he wanted to make sure I wasn't post-dating a check. I said, "Yes, that's today." One person in all of that time happened to have been a non-Jewish Arab, pump jockey, a gas station attendant, who said, "You can't do this." I said, "Yes, I can." And he took out a pen and he wrote the secular date near where I had written the Jewish date. That was the biggest problem. Oh, yeah, one time the bank bounced a check of mine as post-dated when it really wasn't, because I had written Rosh Chodesh, and my Resh at the beginning was a little curved at the bottom. So he read it as Kaf Chet, 28th of the month, which hadn't occurred yet, and they bounced the check. But so now I write Aleph instead of Rosh Chodesh. My point, even though I am beating it a little too harshly, my point is, and you'll see more why in a couple of minutes, but it's a nice thing to do. It's a special thing to do. And I would even suggest that Jews who still have not yet made Aliyah and hear my words and want to put them into some kind of action might use the place for a notation at the bottom of a check, I'm talking about outside of Israel, to mark down the Jewish date, just so that you become more and more aware of it. I used to start my talk about the Jewish calendar with 30 days, half September, April, June, and November, and the audience would chime in with the rest of it, and just about everybody knew that. And then I asked, how many days are there in Tammuz? How many days in Kislev? And I got these looks of, like, how am I supposed to know that? And the answer is, you're supposed to know that because you're Jewish. And if you're Jewish, you have a special calendar. And how do I know this? The pasuk that I read. What does God say to the Jewish people? HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem. Lachem means it's yours. Rishon Hu, it repeats. It is the first. Lachem, for you, L'chodshei HaShana. So that word Lachem carries with it a lot of significance. Now, let's take another introductory look. The mitzvah out of 613, called setting up the Jewish calendar, has, most people think, two components. I say three components, and I base it on the Rambam's treatment of the topic. First component is that our months follow the cycle of the moon, the cycle of the phases of the moon. The moon goes through its phases from our perspective on Earth in approximately 29 and a half days, from any point you want to start till you get back to that same point, be it first quarter, full moon, second quarter, waxing this, waning that, gibbonous this. It doesn't matter where you start, new moon. Wherever you start, it takes approximately 29 and a half days to go through the full cycle of phases. But specifically, we are taught to view new moon, which is no moon, when the moon is between the Earth and the sun, and its dark side is lit up by the sun, but we can't see it, and the side that faces us is dark, and therefore we can't see it. We get its impression during a solar eclipse, but that's it, we can't see it. That's the beginning of the month, and the moon goes through its phases in approximately 29 and a half days, and that, by the law of this mitzvah, is our definition of a month. Second aspect of the calendar is to adjust the calendar so that specifically Pesach, Passover, is in the springtime. The Torah makes repeated mention of the fact that we came out of Egypt in the springtime, and this is not just a piece of calendar information. It's very symbolic, because spring is rebirth. And when the Jews came out of Egypt, they had suffered years and years of the dead of winter in their Jewish lives. And now they were emerging into a new era, the springtime of Am Yisrael, the people of Israel. So the calendar has to be adjusted. Sukkot is also mentioned as taking place in the fall. And this is accomplished by adding a month every so often. There's a rule that belongs to all the rules of the calendar that you can't subdivide a month. So you can't say that you need 11 days approximately each year to keep Pesach in the springtime. So let's add 11 days at the end of the year. Can't do that. You have to work in whole months. If you work in whole months, it comes out that 7 times in a 19-year period will be just right to adjust the calendar to the solar calendar, which governs, doesn't govern the seasons, which is governed by the seasons, and that keeps Pesach in the springtime. Many details, which I'm not getting into, but bigadol. The big picture is we have our months following the cycle of the moon. We have years adjusted by intercalating, I think is the term, a month periodically. Now, this year, the month that is added is another Adar, because it's right before Nisan, which is the reason that we add, because Nisan has Pesach. In other words, you could really add it any time of the year. You add a month periodically, and it'll have the same effect on Pesach in the springtime. But it won't be obvious to us that the reason that we add this month is to adjust so that Pesach is in the springtime. Let me sum up for a moment. If we define a month as the cycle of the phases of the moon, that is consistent even with the name month, and 12 of those make a lunar year, but the lunar year is short. It is not 365 and almost a quarter on average days, but it is closer to 354 days. And that means it's 11 days short, and that 11 will accumulate year after year. So by 3 years, you're already 33 days short, and now it works to put in a full extra month, so we'll only be 3 days short. And that will keep Pesach where it belongs. In our time, with our fixed calendar, there is a pattern. The pattern is 7 years out of every 19-year cycle, and the specific years, 7 of them, are the 3rd, 6th, 8th, 11, 14, 17, and 19. Those are the 7 years out of a 19-year cycle that has two Adars, and that month will be bigger, longer than a regular solar month, but it will balance out so that in a 19-year period, the number of months, number of days that have passed will be very close. And that's why many people notice that on their 19th birthday, and sometimes also their 38th and 57th, and 57 and 19 is 75th, no, 57, 76, and so on, their secular birth date and their Jewish birth date can coincide or be a day off, plus or minus. Anyway, that's a fine look at the calendar. What we have so far are two factors which are independent of each other: the months declared following the moon, and the years adjusted based on the sun, meaning on the seasons. There is a third dimension to this mitzvah, and that is that we, meaning our representatives who handle this for us, must know what's going on. That sounds a little funny, but I want to emphasize it because it's part of the mitzvah. Let me explain it in a different way. Testimony is almost always to supply the judges in a case with facts that they do not have personal knowledge of. Take a simple financial issue. A brings B to court, a court of three, a financial court, and claims that he lent $1,000, shekels, pounds, whatever you want, to B, and he never paid him back, and the loan is way overdue. And B says, I don't know what he's talking about. I never borrowed from him. Or maybe I did, but I paid back, or I paid back some different details, not important at the moment. The judges have a claimant saying that he lent money to the other guy and never got paid back. And we have the respondee, or whatever he's called, claiming he did pay him back or he never borrowed. So the judges don't know who to believe. So witnesses, if they are available, are called by A to testify that they were present. Of course, a document and an IOU signed would even be better. But witnesses, in lack of a written agreement, witnesses will testify that they saw with their own eyes A lend a thousand whatevers to B. They can't testify that B never paid him back, but they can testify that they saw the loan. Now the judges have information that they didn't have before. And now they are not only going to believe A, that he did lend it, they'll believe him when he says he never paid it back, because he has established the truth of the loan, which the other guy denied. Again, there are more details in this that complicate things. Leave it. Plain fact, judges don't know. There's a hole in their knowledge. And a witness, two witnesses at least, fill that hole with information. Take a different example. Woman wants to get married. She and her husband-to-be go to the Beit Din for a marriage license. And in their records, they show that she was previously married. Do you have, what happened to your first husband? Divorce. Do you have divorce documents? No, I lost them. So it's possible that she will call two witnesses who were present or maybe even signed the divorce document, and they will testify before the court that they saw the divorce take place. And on that basis, the court will decree that she is eligible to marry and will allow her to marry this new guy. They didn't have enough information before. They have enough information now. And it goes for A, beating up B, or killing him, or whatever. Public desecration of Shabbat, idol worship. You need witnesses to testify to give the judges facts. The judges don't know it themselves. Testimony of two or more kosher witnesses establishes facts. The one shining exception to this is testimony for the calendar. Kiddush HaChodesh goes like this. Let's take this current month as an example. We announced last Shabbat that the Molad of Shvat would be Sunday morning at about 11 o'clock. The fact of the matter is that it was really the real Molad, I don't want to get into why it's different, was closer to 4 in the morning on Sunday. 4 in the morning on Sunday means 12 hours till 4 late afternoon, and another hour or two until the moon would be visible. And the fact of the matter is that 16 hours is not enough to be able to see the moon with a naked eye. Moon has to be a little bit more mature than that. But a witness shows up from out of town, and he goes to the Beit Din in Yerushalayim to testify that he saw the first visibility of the lunar crescent. And again, the details complicate things, so you'll have to just take this as a hypothetical. What's more likely is the Molad would have been, which it can be on some months even earlier, let's say early in the night previous, and then the judges will determine whether or not the moon might be visible on a given evening, and they'll wait for witnesses. And the witnesses said, one witness says, I was outside, and I looked towards the sky, and there it was, a little tiny, cute little sliver of moon, and I realized that that was the first visibility of the lunar crescent, and here I am to give testimony. Now, this time, they are not telling the judges something that the judges don't know, because the judges for this process of the monthly sanctification of Rosh Chodesh are required as part of this mitzvah to know in advance not only if the moon will be visible, but where in the sky and how big and which direction it's leaning, and every detail that will help them cross-examine this witness. Because this witness doesn't really know what he saw. He thinks he saw the Levana b'chidusha, when in fact he might have seen a wisp of a cloud, or the last ray of the sun reflecting off the bubble of a helicopter, or whatever. So part of the mitzvah for the judges of Sanhedrin is to know everything they can about the moon. The witnesses come, they are not telling the judges something the judges don't know, like they are in every other kind of testimony. They are doing what the Torah wants them to do, and that is present themselves before the Beit Din, who will confirm what they testify to, that it is truth, based on the committee of Sanhedrin judges that have calculated by the celestial mechanics of what they are looking at, of what this witness was seeing. Why all of this if they know in advance? The answer is the word that I stressed before, the word that's repeated in this pasuk, HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem L'Chodshei Hashana. Rishon Hu Lochem, Lochem, Chodesh HaZeh Lochem, Rosh Chodeshim, Rishon Hu Lochem L'Chodshei Hashana. Lochem, Lochem, it's yours. Now we had a situation this month where we already marked Rosh Chodesh Shvat this past Sunday night, Monday. And that's because that's how our calendar calculates Shvat to begin, which was very soon after the Molad of Shvat, which is where God wanted the month to start. So far we're on target. But, hypothetically, if we had a Sanhedrin, a Supreme Court sitting now, which we don't, a committee of those members of the Sanhedrin in charge of the months would have made their calculations, would have questioned the witnesses, and based on the successful testimony of two witnesses, would declare Rosh Chodesh. And in this month's case, they would not have done that on Monday morning because the moon was not visible on Sunday evening. So the 30th day of Tevet, which we don't have in our calendar, there would have been, with the Sanhedrin, a 30th day of Tevet, and Rosh Chodesh Shvat would have been Monday night, Tuesday, a day later than the one that I just told you we had this year and was very close to where it was supposed to be. So the question then that I am dancing with is, which does God prefer? For us to be able to compute and calculate when Rosh Chodesh should be by a formula that was perfected, we'll say, by an old Sanhedrin, or which produced an on-time Rosh Chodesh, or does God prefer that we be a whole day late? Because we were not able to see the Levana B'chidusha, even though with a telescope it might have been able to be seen. And that's not enough. That's not good enough for us. We need eyewitness testimony to the first visibility of the lunar crescent. Eyewitness testimony is faulty. You can sometimes see what you think you're looking at, but it's not there. You can sometimes be stymied by a cloudy night. Last night was the first opportunity, according to Minhag Yerushalayim, to say Kiddush Levana, and the 20 times that I checked, it was totally cloudy in Yerushalayim with rain, and I'm hoping for clear skies, which it looks like it is now, for this evening, which is coming up in an hour's time from now, based on when I'm recording these words. The answer is, God says, you know what, I will wait for the people to be active participants in the sanctification of time, because that's what I want. I taught them the concept of sanctity of time with Shabbat, and I went one step further by giving them the power to sanctify time for Rosh Chodesh. And what that means is not just Rosh Chodesh, but any holiday within a given month is sacred and sanctified only because Rosh Chodesh of that month was sanctified. And who did that sanctification? B'nai Yisrael. It's as if God said, they messed this up, they're a day late, that's fine with me, I'll change my calendar. Because I'm not looking for perfection here, I'm looking for active participation by the Jewish people. And that's what we're missing without a Sanhedrin. And that's why there's a little bit of melancholy in Rosh Chodesh. because Rosh Chodesh is coming and we know when it's coming and we have calendars for a year in advance and 5 years in advance and 200 years in advance and forever in advance if you need it. But it's not active participation unless we are able to go to Yerushalayim, or in the case of where I'm speaking from, to come to Yerushalayim to testify to the first visibility of the lunar crescent, and then at sunrise on the morning of Rosh Chodesh Day, to actually be able to hear the ceremony whereby the king or the president or the nasi will announce today is holy, based on testimony which came in during the night and was verified by the Sanhedrin. I hereby declare today is Kodesh, holy. And the people answer, Kodesh, Kodesh, or Mikudash, Mikudash, or whatever. That's it. That's why I get excited about this. That's why I better save this piece that I've been talking for almost 42 minutes with and make sure that it does not bounce out of the program, which I don't know what I'll do if it does. But I'll be right with you in a moment. I want to play a clip now by Mordechai Ben David from 1995. Those of us who have been around for a while don't really look to 1995 as all that long ago. But the fact of the matter, it is almost 25 years, 24 years. And he was introducing a really new song at the time, Yehi HaChodesh Hazeh. One of the reasons I like the song so much is that it speaks of Rosh Chodesh, but the song comes from the context of songs from Motzoi Shabbat, the eve following Shabbat. And there you have both types and levels of sanctification of time from the ebbing away of the sanctity of Shabbat. You're talking about the sanctity of the month. So it sort of sums up part of what I've been saying. Mordechai Ben David, and then I will say some parting words.
Yeah.
Turn something on its head. The fact of the matter is that out of 20 mitzvot in Parshat Bo, there's only this one that deals with the calendar, as important as it is, and 19 of them deal directly or indirectly with Pesach. And yet I spent most of the show, maybe all of it, on the month, on the calendar. So even though I said at the beginning of the show that we have another opportunity to talk Pesach when it's not Pesach, I didn't take that opportunity, but instead I wanted to focus, as I do, on HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem. The follow-up to what I was saying before about writing checks. People, no matter where you live, Jews, no matter where you live, should know your Jewish birthday. You want to do what we do in my family, and that is celebrate from the Hebrew to the English birthday. Sometimes it's close to a month apart, sometimes a couple of days. But we let that period be the birthday period of the particular child or adult. It's customs that we did in my childhood, and I did with my children, and the next generation are already benefiting from it. But certainly, I'm not negating the knowledge that a person has of his secular date, but we should know the Jewish date as well. And the same thing goes for every single day, and the same thing goes for when you use it. I remember, I do it kind of often, when I buy something from when I used to buy something from a religious storekeeper, or a Haredi storekeeper, or a Hasidic storekeeper, back in the days when not everything was printed out by computer, but they used to fill in a receipt by hand, and I would watch them put today's date as 10/10.1.19, I would go tisk, tisk, tisk. And they'd look up at me and say, "What? It is the 10th. I said, "Whose 10th is it?" "HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem Rosh Chodeshim." That means that we're not in the first month now. That would be Nisan. We're in Shvat, which is the 11th month of the year. And we're not on the 10th day of the month. We're on the 4th day of the month. So, and we're not in the year 19 or 2019, but we're in the year 5,779. So they would defend themselves by saying, this is what the tax people need. So I'm saying, you're in a country that officially accepts the Jewish calendar. Use it. Use it. So some of them took it seriously and others maybe didn't. And it's a minor point. But what do we have today? We have, we don't today, without a Sanhedrin, sanctify the months that have been done based on the calculation by a previous Sanhedrin. We don't add a month every so often to the year based on a committee that makes a decision to do that. We have a pattern. What are we left with? Knowledge. And I believe, and this is where I started, I believe that it is part of the mitzvah of HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem Rosh Chodeshim Rishon Hu Lochem L'Chodshei Hashanah, that we, each and every single Jew, knows how the calendar works, plus or minus, and uses it for whatever you can. This week in the hard copy of Torah Tidbits, there are a lot of facts about the months, and I do it all the time. I fell in love with it. Interestingly, the Greeks knew very well how valuable it is to a nation to have its calendar, and that's why one of the mitzvot that they targeted for their oppression was Kiddush HaChodesh. So they knew the secret to the viability of a nation, that it should have its own calendar. We should accept that and revel in it. On that note, I will wish you a Chodesh Tov and a Shabbat Shalom. And what I'm going to finish the show with is a track by Michael Streicher, which I fell in love with many, many years ago when I heard it. It is the Rosh Chodesh benching, which should have been last Shabbos, meaning the last show, but I didn't do it, but I'm going to do it now. And it's a combination of nice cantorial music, which, how do you call it, bursts into song at its conclusion. So be patient, and I think you'll be rewarded by an overall beautiful musical presentation. Again, Chodesh Tov, Shabbat Shalom, Lehishtameya.
Bye.